Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Mem Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin on the first wide line of Daf Mem Tes. We quote from the Mishnah that we saw at the bottom of Mem Ches Omid Beis. The topic that we're dealing with has to do with payment in the case of a miscarriage. We saw in the Mishnah that if a man causes a woman to miscarry, payment must be made. And on the side of our Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading that we call klali, a general topic heading. In the upcoming sugya, in the upcoming section of Gemara, we'll be dealing with tashlumin, payments for demei vlados, the value of the miscarriage itself. The vlados are the miscarried babies. Shevach vlados. That's an expression that we'll see in the Gemara. The Mishnah didn't use that expression, but that has to do with the additional bulk that a woman that characterizes a woman who is pregnant. That additional size is something that the Gemara views is of value. So that the increased bulk of the woman has now been reduced as a result of the miscarriage. So that has to be taken into consideration as well, as far as compensation and nezek, any personal body damage that the woman herself experiences. In the Mishnah, the issue was ketzad mishalim demei vlados. How is demei vlados to be compensated for? That expression focuses on the miscarriage itself, the children, the fetus that was released and died. What about the shevach vlados payment that we just made reference to? So our Gemara asks, demei vlados u shevach vlados mi boyalei. The Mishnah should have said payment is made not only for the miscarriage itself, but for the loss of the increased mass that the woman had enjoyed while she was pregnant. The Gemara answers, Hachi Nami Komar. In fact, that is part of our consideration. The Mishnah is really saying, Ketzad Mishalim Demei Vlados U Shvach Vlados. How is payment to be made for the miscarriage, which entails the loss of the children and the loss of the bulk of the woman? Answer, Shomen Esu Isho Kamuhi Yofa Ad Shelo Yolda. We evaluate how much was the woman worth before she gave birth. V'kamiyofa mishyaldon, how much is she worth now after the children have come out? Again, we quote from the Mishnah, Omer of Shimon Gamliel, Im kein mishyisha yoledes mishabachas, Maiko Omar. What Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said in the Mishnah is not clear. And we take a look at the Rashi who explains what's bothering the Gemara. My Ko'omar, the Rashi that we're looking at, you'll see is further down in the Rashi commentary. Demashma, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's response to the Tanakhama is Mashma. Dehochi Ko'omar Le. Thusly, he is saying to the Tanakhama, Dim Kain, L'ditcha is loch de mishiisha yoledes mishabachas. According to what you're saying, from the words of Rav Shimon Gamliel, he seems to be saying to the Tanakhama that according to what you are saying, the woman is worth more after she gives birth. But the Tanakhama ho kama de mafchisa. The Tanakhama didn't say that. that? The Tanakhama said that her value is reduced. We just said that she has additional value in terms of the children that she's carrying and the bulk that that's characteristic of her. Why does Rav Shimon ben Leo attack the Tanakhama with the sense that after she gives birth she's worth more? So Omar Rabba, as we see in the Gemara with our markings, we have on the side a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The topic and the structural note features this triangle. It represents Shnei Hezberim B'divrei Rav Shimon ben Leo B'Mishnah. So you first see Rabba. If you skim down further, you see another triangle with Rava. So even though their names sound the same, they're two different individuals, Rabba and then later Rava. So, Omar Rabba, Hochi Ka'omar. Thusly, Rav Shimon ben Leo is saying to the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama did in fact indicate that prior to the birth she was worth more, and as a result of the miscarriage, she's worth less. V'chi isha mishabachas kodem shetelet yoser milachar shetelet. Is it so that a woman is improved or is worth more before she gives birth more than afterwards? V'lo isha mishabachas la'achar shetelet yoser mikodem shetelet. The woman is worth more after the birth than before the birth. Rashi explains. We look at Rashi together. V'lo isha mishabachas bedomim. Bedomim is value, money. Liachar sheteled, she's worth more after the birth. Demitchila domea pusim limocher. Before she actually gives birth, her value is less, is reduced. Why? Shemisukenes hi lomus bitzar leda. There's the danger of her dying in the course of childbirth. V'hochi mashmas nisin. And now Rashi explains how to understand or appreciate the Mishnah. Im kain dekach shomen kedeko amris. Rav Shimon ben Leo is saying to the Tanakhama, if payment is going to be evaluated like you say, ishtakach delo yohiv le midi, it would come out that nothing is being paid. Demisha isha yoledes mishabachas, her value is increased after she gives birth, after the children are out of her, she's worth more. So now let's turn back to the Gemara. So we understand now what Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was saying to the Tanakhama. You, the Tanakhama, give us the impression that she's worth more before the birth, but that's not so. She's worth more after the birth. Ela, we continue in the Gemara. Shomen es havlodois v'noisnin labal. We evaluate the value of the children, of the miscarriage, and of the loss of the children, and that is paid to the husband. Tanya nami hochi. And now we have a braisa that spells out that which Rabba offered as his explanation in the Mishnah. So that the braisa then confirms Rabba's presentation. What does it say? V'chi isha mishabachas yoser kodem sheteled yoser milachas sheteled. Rav Shimon ben Leo is saying to the Tanakhama, according to you, are we to then conclude that a woman is worth more before she gives birth than after she gives birth? The woman improves. She survived the release of the children, and that is of greater value to us than a woman in a state of danger, i.e. prior to her giving birth. So that a woman improves la'achar she'teled more than before the birth. So how is payment to be made? Ela shomen es havlodos v'noisnim labal. We evaluate the cost of the children that were miscarried, and that is paid to the husband. Rova Omar hachi kotoni v'chi isha. And what is Rava doing? He's giving his explanation of what Rav Shimon ben Leo said to the Tanakhama. V'chi isha l'mi sheyoledes mishabachas v'ein le'atzmo b'shevach v'lodos klum. in order to appreciate Rava, we look together at Rashi. V'chi l'misha isha yoledes, l'misha zachsu Torah d'mei v'lados. Are we to understand that the one unto whom the Torah grants the child value, Yavino Nami Shevach Deme Nafcha, are we to pay him also that bulk value that's lost as a result of the miscarriage? Shedme Gufa Mis Alin, that the value of her body is more when she has a more bulky appearance. Ha Vadai Shevach Deme Nafcha Machmas Gufa Nami Osi. Venezeku, her increased body value that's now been diminished had been a result of her own body as well, not just the children, but the biological phenomenon of an increased body size while she had been pregnant, and that loss is in the that loss must be compensated for, that is due to the woman. That loss is in the realm of nezek. Nezek is another form of payment. We can call it damage that results in depreciation, a term that we've seen very often throughout our Masechta already. So that in addition to the demei vlados, which I understand, that goes to the husband, that goes to the father of the children, but the loss in body bulk shouldn't go exclusively to him. Her body also contributed to that additional size, and its loss is nezek, and that's a payment due to the woman. So that Rava was saying in our Gemara he said v'ein la'atzma b'shevach v'lodos klum, does she not have anything coming to her in that shevach v'lodos, which had to do with the increased body bulk that's now lost? Ella, so Rava explains in the name of Reb Shimon Leo, what does Reb Shimon Leo want the payment to be? Shomen es havlodos v'nosim lebaal, the value of the children loss itself, that goes to the husband. V'shevach v'lodos cholkim, the loss of body bulk as a result of the miscarriage, that value is split between the woman herself and the husband. Tanya nami hochi. Omar Abshumam Leo, and likewise, as we said before, with Rabbo here, we have a Tanaic source that offers an explanation of Abshumam Leo according to Rava. Omar Abshumam Leo. V'chi isha l'mi she'oledas mashabachas v'ein la'atzmo b'shevach v'lodos klum, elo shomen nezek b'fnei atzmo. Rather, Reb Shmuel Leo says the evaluation of her own personal depreciation is calculated, v'tzar b'fnei atzmo, and the pain is also evaluated that she has experienced through this miscarriage, through being attacked by the man that we saw in the Mishnah. V'shomen es havlodos v'nosin l'baal, an evaluation of the child value is paid then to the husband. V'shevach v'lodos cholkim, and I think that this is the point that we want to really emphasize here at the end, that the shevach v'lodos is split. This is what Rava had emphasized as Reb Shimon Leal's claim against the Tanakama. At this point, the Gemara raises a new question within the understanding of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Kashya Reb Shimon Gamliel ad Reb Shimon Gamliel. When is a woman worth more, before the birth or after the birth? Let us take a look at Rashi, who explains where we see a seeming contradiction. On the second wide line under the Gemara text, Kashya de Reb Shimon v'chulei, Reb Shimon is a reference to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Tehocha kotoni v'shevach v'lodos cholkim, Almo isha mishabachas limocher kshihora yosem erikonis. We speak here in terms of the woman who experienced the miscarriage as having greater value before the birth, and that is what we were valuing. The loss in bulk value is calculated, and they split that value. So what do you see from here? You see that a woman pregnant is worth more than a woman, reikonis literally means empty, means without child. Uliel katani, but before we had seen, Isha Meshabachas Mishatelet Yosef Mikodim Lachain. Reb Shlomo Uliel before had said that she's actually worth more after the birth than before. We brought up the issue of the sakana, the life-threatening element to giving birth, so that once she survives that, so we're now home safe, and she's worth more than prior to the birth, where we were in doubt would she survive. So according to Shulman Leo, at what point is she worth more? Lo kasha, there's no contradiction. Kan mivakeres, kan b'sheinu mivakeres. If you're dealing with a woman in her first birth, then she is in fact worth more after the birth. A woman is considered most susceptible to danger, to death, during her first birth. Is she capable of surviving a birth or not? Until she's given birth, we don't know that. So there's an element of doubt before the birth. Hence, afterwards, once she survives, we say she's worth more now than before, when we had this doubt, would she survive a birth? However, kan b'she'enu mevakeres, if it's a second birth, if it's a subsequent birth, we know she's capable of surviving birth. Hence, her value is greater before the birth, when we don't have that element of doubt anymore, would she survive, more so than after the birth, as a result of the loss of bulk. V'rabbonon, the Amri Shevach Vlodos Nami Labal Maitaima, according to the Rabbonon, the Tanakama, who Reb Shimon ben Gamliel had been attacking, the Tanakama, you can see, was of the opinion that not only the Demei Vlodos, but the Shevach Vlodos also went to the Baal. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's whole revelation was, no, the Sheva Vlados is to be divided between the man and woman, the husband and wife. The Tanakama evidently had said that the Sheva Vlados goes to the husband. Why is that? It's not. It's taught in the following Tanaic source. The Girsa suggestion on the side is Kiddisanya, indicating that this would be a Brisa, as opposed to a Mishnah. So Kiddisanya, Mimashma Shinemar V'yotsu Yilodeo. In the Pasuk that's relevant to this discussion, Perek Chof Aleph of Sefer Shmois Pasuk Chof Beis, we have included this Pasuk on the side of the Gemara. So let's take a look at it together. I think we'll appreciate the Gemara, Bryce's point a little more. On the side we've included the Pasuk which says, V'chi inotsu anoshim, when two men are in altercation, v'nokfu ishahara, and a pregnant woman is impacted, v'yotsu yolodeo, and she miscarries, v'lo yason, and there's no death of there's no death involved here of one of the people, anoshi anesh kasher yoshis olabalo isha v'nosan b'flilim, monetary compensation shall be made. So now in turning back to the Braisa, Mimashma Shinemar V'yotzi Lodeo, from the fact that the Pasuk mentions the children come out, meaning there's a miscarriage, the fetus falls out as a result of the impact. Eini Yodea Shihar, would I not know that you're dealing with a pregnant woman? Matama Loma Hora. Why does the Pasuk have to add the word Hora? It could have simply said V'nogfu Isha V'yotsu Yilodeo without the Hora. Hora means pregnant. It's obvious that she was pregnant. Every word of the Torah has a reason for being there. The Torah is not only every word, every letter has a reason for being there in the Torah. The Torah is very frugal with its words. And if it added the word Hora, a point that I could have understood on my own, why is it taught? Lomar Loch, it teaches me, Sheva Herayin Lebal, the increased value that the woman has while pregnant. We indicated before the increased body bulk, mass, was perceived to be something of beauty or of increased value, of health. So that payment, the Torah indicates by adding the word hora, according to the Rabbanan, is a payment made, namely the loss in body bulk as a result of the miscarriage, that value is paid to the husband. Rab Shimon Gamliel Hai Hora Mai Dorish Bay. What does Rab Shimon Gamliel do with this word? He didn't say that. He meant she indicated Shevach Vlados is split between the two. Miboyale, so Rab Shimon Gamliel needs that Lichidetanya for the following teaching. The man that attacked the woman, that impacted the woman, is not guilty until the impact that causes her miscarriage is opposite the part of her body that's associated with pregnancy. Don't say that it means that part of her anatomy which therein contains the fetus. Ela kol hecha de solik be shicha molevlad. Rather, beis haroyon means any part of her body which contributes to added warmth to the unborn. So what part of the body contributes to the warmth, and which part doesn't? La fuke yad v'regel delo, to the exclusion of the extended limbs, the arm, the leg. Those are limbs that, if in the altercation described in the Mishnah and in the Chumash and the Torah, resulting in impacting of the woman on her arm or leg, and afterwards she miscarried, the payment of Demei Vlados and Sheva Vlados would not be made, because there we say that the impact there is not the cause of the miscarriage. However, if it's in any other part of her torso, that would generate a payment, even though it might have been an impact on a part of her torso that's not actually opposite covering the area in which the fetus itself is contained. Hoysa shivcha v'nishtachra o giores poter. We saw in our Mishnah, if the pregnant woman that the Torah describes that miscarried happened to be a heathen bondmaid that was set free, or a convert to Judaism, there would be no payment made. Let us go over Rashi on the Mishnah. We made reference to this in our previous year, but in order to appreciate the continuation of Gemara, it would be of value to look at the Rashi. And maybe even before we do that, we glance at the side of our Gemara, where we have a Nosei topic heading, which reads, Achoivel be'eshes giores, be'isho giores, one who attacks a woman, who impacts a woman that's a convert. I should say, maybe we'd read this more accurately, Beatius Ger, the wife of a convert. So, a man attacks a woman who is married to a Ger, to a convert. Bechaye Hager, the impacting of the woman who was pregnant, took place when the husband, the Ger, was alive. Or Achar Misas Hager, after the Ger, the convert husband, died. Lemi Mishalmim, unto whom is payment made in these cases? Demei Vlados, Shevach Vlados. Then we mentioned before that in order to appreciate the sugi a little more, let's just go over Rashi on the Mishnah. Hoysa Shivcha v'nishtachro giores. You can see the Rashi on the second line from the top. Hoysa Shivcha v'nishtachro klomar. Hoysa mishuchreres ogiores nesua leger. The gioras is the convert woman married to a convert. Regarding the shivcha mishuchreres leeved mishuchor, the women described have been married to these men. The ain law baal. The Mishnah spoke about a case of payment exemption. Why is there payment exemption? the husband is not around. Shemes, he's dead. Potter, there is no payment made in these cases. The hamachzik benichsi ager shemes veino yorshim, one who is holding the property of a ger that died, leaving no heirs. Zocha, he benefits. Vizet, and in the case of the attacker who caused the miscarriage, kodem lizkos b'mashiv yado, he has first claim on that which is already in his possession, namely the payment that he would have had to make had the ger husband been alive. Let us now turn to the Gemara. We have a marking, a diamond, and on the side, in the margin under our Mivneh heading, the diamond is featured, and it reads, Machloikis Rabov Rav Chisda. We'll see a disagreement between Rabba and later Rav Chisda, Be'inyin Tashlum Demei Vlados, regarding this issue of payment of miscarriage value, B'mi Shechoval B'eshes Giores Achar Misas Baila, when the impact of the woman who had been married to the the woman who had been married to the ger after the death of her husband. Omar Rabba Loi Shonu, the teaching of the Mishnah that there would be exemption because of the for the miscarriage caused to the Shivcha v'Nishtachor or the Gyuris, that exemption is qualified. Lo shanu elo shechoval bo b'chaye hager umeis hager. The impact took place when the convert husband had been alive and then died. The kevan de choval bo b'chaye hager, since the impact took place when the ger convert husband was alive, zocha behu ger. The ger himself is zoiche. He acquires the rights to those payment, to that payment. The kevan de meis hager, and upon his death, zocha behu min hager. The aggressor, the attacker, he acquires it from the ger. A convert that dies without relatives, without heirs, so the attacker who's holding on to that money keeps it. Avochoval bo liachar misas hager, if the woman was attacked and miscarried after the death of her husband, zachya lo ihi begavaihu umechayev lishlume lo ledida, she acquires the rights to those payments, and therefore the attacker is obligated to pay her. The word begavaihu literally means in it. She is zoiche. She acquires the payment. It, the payment, and therefore payment shall be made to her. Omar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda, you will see, disagrees with Rabba. Mori Dichi, it's an expression, master of this teaching. Otu Vlodos Tsrorininu Vizachi Behu. Are children, in the context of miscarriage, are they literally coins that are tied up in pouches? Are they articles that you describe as acquiring from Hefker? The way you describe things is that if the impact took place during the husband's lifetime and then the husband died, with the death of the husband, the nichsi hager, the property of the ger, is considered unowned, and the attacker thereby acquires it from a state of Hefker. Hefker is that which is unowned. That's not the way to look at the Vlados. Ela, rather, Isay Labal, if the husband is around, Zocha Le Rachmona, the husband is entitled by the Torah to receive that payment, he or his heirs. If you're talking about our sukkah, there are no heirs, so the continuation is relevant, lesse labal, if the husband is not around. What happens with the demei vlados? There's no husband. Lo, if there's no husband and no heirs, so there is no payment to be made. So that if the impact took place after the woman is dead, after the husband is dead, there is no payment that is made, not to the woman. So that's why the attacker will keep the payment even when the impact took place after the husband died. Mesve, we raise a question on Rabbah. Rabbah made the point that if the impact took place after the ger husband died, then she, the mother of these of the miscarriage, is entitled to receive the payment. Well, let's see what the following source has to say. Hika es ha'isha v'yotzu yiladeha. The woman was impacted and she miscarried. Noisein nezek v'tzar le'isha. These are two forms of payment. The nezek depreciation and tzar, the pain value, is paid to the woman. Udmei vlados labal. And the value of the miscarriage itself, the children itself, is paid to the husband. Ein habal noisein liorshav. If there's no husband, the demei vlodus would be paid to his heirs. Ein ha'isha, no same liorshav. If the woman is not around, so then the nezek and tsar is paid to her heirs. Ha'isa shivcha v'nishtachra oy giyuris zocha. If the woman impacted was a heathen bondmaid set free or a convert woman, then the attacker, Zocha, he keeps the payment. Rashi at the bottom line says, Hachovel, Zocha Hachovel, the Chovel is the attacker, is Zocha, merits, keeping, acquires, B'mashivyon, that which is already in his possession. Vafilu, and here we've dashed underlined in the Rashi the main point. Vafilu achar misas hager, choval ba, Zocha ba. Even if the impact took place after the ger husband died, the attacker keeps the money, does not pay it to her, contrary to Rabbah. The Gemara responds, Amri umi adifo mi masnisin. Is this Tanaic source any stronger than the Mishnah? Is it any more of a problem for Rabbah than the Mishnah? The Ukimna, we explained the Mishnah. Shechoval bo b'chai hager umeis hager. The ptur, the exemption that was taught in the Mishnah, as Rabbah himself qualified, is only when the attack took place when the husband was alive and subsequently died. Hachonami, so too in this Tanaic source that you're with which you're challenging Rabbah, Rabbah will tell you shechava bo b'chayei hager umeis hager. The impact took place when the husband was alive and then died. That leaving it as nichse hager shemes that are hefker, and hence the attacker can keep it. Not so in this, in a case where the impact took place after the ger husband was dead. The iboy asema, another approach to with which to defend Rabbah, is the achar misas hager. The impact described in this source was after the ger died, and utni, we're at the top of Omid Beis, utni zochsa, and understand the word at the end of this source, shezocha, more as referring to the woman being zocha, the woman acquiring the payment, the rights to that payment. Lema ketanoi. Here we have a question. And the question is, shall we say that the machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Chisda is essentially a Tanaic disagreement? The presentation here is in with a long question marking, so take note of that. Bas Yisrael Shenisei Sliger, a Jewish woman that married a convert, Venis Abra Mimenu, and was impregnated by him, the Choval Ba, and someone attacked her, hit her, and all of this, of course, is in the context of the of a miscarriage. So this attack, when did it take place? Bechaye Hager, Nosein Demei Vlados Lager. If during the Ger's lifetime, the convert's lifetime, money is paid to him. Liachar Mises Hager, if impact took place after he died, in other words, she was impregnated by the Ger husband, but he died before the birth, and then she was attacked. Tani Chana, Chayav, one source says payment must be made. The Tani Chana, Potter, and the other source, number two, says exempt. My love, Tanoi Ninu. Is it not so then that the issue of impacting and miscarrying a woman after the Ger husband's death is payment made or not? Payment to the woman made or not is a machlokes tanoim. Source 1 says you pay the woman. Source 2 says you don't pay the woman. So then it sounds very much like the machlokes Rabba and Rav Chista. The Gemara says l'Rabba vadai tanoihi. As far as Rabba's position is concerned, that said you have to pay the woman after when impact took place after the ger died. So his position is definitely subject to this Tanaic controversy. In other words, he, Rabba, who said payment must be made, fits in, conforms only to source number one. That's the Toni Chada Chayav. The source that said exempt cannot be resolved according to Rabba's approach. So, as far as Rabba is concerned, Rabba is an Amora. He'll say, I hold like Tana, number one. Elo, the Rav Chista, mi lema tanoihi. According to Rav Chista, who said that there one is always exempt. That means that even if the impact took place after the Ger husband died, one does not pay. So are we to say that he conforms only with source number two and he is opposed by source number one? To this we respond, lo kashya, not so. Before we go further, let's take a look at Rashi, three lines from the top. Elo l'Rav Chista, mi lema, mi mibaya le, l'ukme milsa beplukta. Do we have to say regarding Rav Chista that his teaching is the subject of a Tanaic controversy? Ulameimar, and the result would then be Ano Diamri Kitana Depotar, and Rav Chista would come out saying that I hold only like the Tana that says exempt. Oh. Or possibly Motzi Litrutzi Hai the Tana Chayov the Milso Achriti. Possibly we can explain the source that says Chayov in another way, the low Tikshile, that won't represent a difficulty for Rav Chista. The Gemara continues then. Lo Kashya. We don't have to say that what Rav Chista says is in accordance with only one of the Tanaic sources. Rather, the two sources, number one and two, Toni Chada Chayev and Toni Chada Potter, are talking about something else. And that explanation, by the way, is understood only by learning the Rashi. So in the meantime, let's read the Gemara, which says, Lo Kashya, Ha Rabbanon, Ha Rab Shulam Leo. The two sources referred to in the framed section are speaking about Shvach Vlados. Rabba and Rav Chista were referring to the Demei Vlados, for the payment regarding the children themselves, the miscarriage itself. These two sources are referring to Shvach Vlados, the issue of the increased bulk. And where did we get this explanation? We mentioned, we got it from Rashi. So we looked together at Rashi, third narrow line. Lo kashi klomar, omar loch Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda would answer, travayu tanoi kavosi kaimi. Both sources would agree with me, b'mev lodos potter, that if, even if the woman is impacted after the husband died, the attacker is exempt from paying demei vlados. The hodisanya chayav, the source that said payment must be made, bishvach vlados valiba de Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the payment for the loss of bulk value, there payment must be made, and that's in accordance with Reb Shimon Gamliel. Demar isha palgo behu. V'hi kayemes, the woman splits, she gets half of it, and she's alive. V'ha detani potter, and the source number two that said no payment. Rabbonani diamri kulu debal, all payment, including shevach vlados, not just the mei vlados, is to the husband. V'rei hu meis, he's dead, v'zocha zem in ahefker, and the attacker benefits. So now we turn back to the Gemara, and it explained that Rav Chisda is not made difficult by the two sources. In other words, Rav Chisda is not in accordance with only one. Rav Chisda, who said there's an exemption of Demei Vlados even when the attack took place after the death of the Ger, all Tanoim would agree with me. The argument here concerns Shevach Vlados. And we explained, the source that says that there is no payment, that is in accordance with the Rabbonan that said Shevach Vlados also is not to be paid to the woman. And the source that says Chayav, that's in accordance with Shimon Leo that says Shevach Vlados is something the woman shares in. Question, E Rav Shimon Leo, my Iriya li achar misa, if the source that says payment must be made is in accordance with Shulam Liel, why is it presented in the source under the heading of La'achar Mises Agir, after the husband's death? Afilu mechayim nami islo palgal, even if the husband is alive, she is entitled to half of the payment. The Gemara says, mechayim islo palgal, when the husband is alive, she gets only half. Li'achar misa kulei, after the husband's death, she's entitled to all of the payment. Ve'iboy esema, another approach to these two sources, one said chayav, the other said potter, ha v'ha Rav Shimon Gamliel. Both are in accordance with Shimon Gamliel. Kan b'shevach vlados, the source that said payment must be made is talking about shevach vlados. Kan, the source that speaks about exemption, b'demei vlados. And that, of course, is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. It's like Rav Chisda, who said that the demei vlados is something that the Torah grants to the husband, the husband only. No payment is ever made to the woman, even if the impact took place after his death. As we go on in the Gemara, we raise a question on Rav Chisda. Amri, Mishvach Vlados Lishma Demei Vlados Umid Reb Shimon Ben Gamliel Lishma LeRabbonan. Let us try to, we'll say, infer, make connections and inferences from one point to another. From the issue of Shvach Vlados, which the woman is entitled to entirely after the death of the husband, that bulk value loss, if the impact took place after the husband died, she is entitled to it exclusively, to a full payment. So from that point, Lishma Demei Vlados. Let us come to conclusions regarding Demei Vlados. Rashi explains what exactly is the problem. So let's look together at Rashi a couple lines down from here. Amri, im kein, if what we've said till now is true regarding Rav Chisda, kashya le Rav Chisda, we have a problem. De mishvach vlados hamagia chetzyoi b'chai ager lager. Regarding shvach vlados, when the husband is alive, he's entitled to half of it. The Komer Reb Shimon and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, "The kshemes v'muberes zosa I b'chelko." When he, in the event that he died, she is left pregnant, she will merit receiving his portion, namely, when the woman is impacted after, the pregnant woman is impacted after his death, after the husband's death. Rav Chisda had explained, according to Shem Leo, she is entitled to all of the Shevach Lo, she gets his portion. Nishma, let us conclude, the Zochsa Nami B'demei Vlados Dabayla, that she is entitled also to the Demei Vlados that would have been paid to her husband. What difference is there between, in terms of looking at the payment of Demei Vlados versus Shvach Vlados? If Shvach Vlados, she inherits her husband's share, Demei Vlados as well. Let the woman be entitled to receive payment for that. And from Reb Shimon Liel, which Rav Chisda had been explaining before, who said that she gets his portion. Nishmanami the Rabbanon, the Zosa Bekulon. Let us say, according to the Rabbanon as well, that she is entitled to receive all. The Rabbanon lo pligi elo b'mechayim. The Rabbanon disagreement with Shimon Liel was only when he was alive. Aval bezchia de misa. Lo pligi Rabbanon Reb Shimon, but as far as her gaining possession upon his death, that we don't see them to be arguing about. And then as a result of this analysis, a woman who was attacked after the husband's death, if the husband, when he was alive, would have been entitled to the Demei Vlados, let the woman now receive that, just like we saw regarding the Shvach Vlados, that when he was alive, he was going to receive, he would have received half of the Shvach Vlados. And Rav Chisda had explained before that upon his death, when she is then impacted, she gets all of the Demei Vlados, of the Shvach Vlados. So just like we see her being Zecha, her acquiring his share in the Demei Vlados, let her acquire his share in the Demei Vlados. Amri Lo. The main point is that if you're going to say that, you're going to end up having the Demei Vlados paid to the woman, contrary to what Rav Chisda had said. Rav Chisda, if you recall, said that the Demei Vlados is never paid to the woman. The Gemara responds, Amri Lo, don't come to this conclusion. Shevach Vlados, the issue of the Shevach Vlados that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel spoke about, the Shaicha Yoda Begavayu, she already had a holding on it. When she was impacted while he was alive, she was going to get half of the Shevach Vlados. So she had a holding on that type of payment. Zachya Behu Bekulhu. When the husband dies, she is entitled to receive a Shevach Vlados payment entirely. So the logic being that she already had a holding on this kind of payment called Shevach Vlados. So it's within the realm of reason that when the husband dies, she gets the full share. Demei Vlados, de lo shaicha yada begavayu, the payment of the child value, where she had no connection to. This, of course, is Rav Chisda Lishitaso. Rav Chisda said that the payment of Dmei Vlados is never made to the woman. So, when the husband was alive, she had no share in the Dmei Vlados. Lo Zachibu Klau. After his death, she is miscarried. She gets nothing of that. She didn't have any holding in that to begin with. Therefore, upon his death, she doesn't get rights to that kind of payment at all. As we continue in the Gemara, you'll notice we have a long question marking. And we also have a triangle that will appear shortly. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The triangle highlights Mikrim. There are cases that you'll see. Shamishutuf lahem, what's common to them, Bo Yisrael v'hifzik, a Jew comes along and takes hold, B'dvorim, Hakshurim leger shemes, to items that were associated with a convert that died. We'll see reference made to shtoros, to documents, mashkon, to collateral. Now we turn to the Gemara. Boy minei Rav Yeva Sava Mirav Nachman, Hamachzik b'shtoroisov shel ger mahu. The case here involves a Jew had become financially obligated to pay a ger, a convert to Judaism. As part of his obligation to pay the ger, the ger received a lien on the Jew's properties. And this lien is recorded in a document. And that's what we're referring to here, the documents of lien that a ger had upon a Jew. The ger died. Someone else had taken possession of these documents. I think it's safe to assume that the documents that indicate that the ger had a lien on the other fellow's properties were in the ger's possession. The ger, this convert, dies. He has no children of his own. And he left these documents that someone else came along and took hold of them, took hold of these papers, these documents. Mahu, the question is, does this outsider have a right to keep the paper? There's no issue here of his getting the property per se, but what about the paper that recorded these liens? The analysis is as follows. You'll notice we have an aleph, and then a number of lines later, there's a squiggle underlined at the beginning of line, O Dilma Beis, giving you the second side of the question. Do we say, Man de machzik b'shtora, adaite de arohu de machzik? One who takes possession of documents like this has in mind the land that's represented in these documents, the lien that we spoke about. Ubara lo achzik. He's not in possession of the land. Whoever owed the money to the ger is in possession of his own land. This guy who took hold of the documents is not in possession of the land. Ushtora nami lo kona. The paper that has this lien information, he doesn't acquire either. Delav daite ashtora. In taking hold of the paper, he doesn't have intention of being an owner of this new piece of paper. Oh, Dilma daite nami ashtora. Or maybe the guy who took possession of this document left by the ger who died has in mind also the paper. So this was Rav Yeva's question to Rav Nachman. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman in response says, Oni Mori, please answer me. V'chilotzer api tzluchiso hu tzorech? Is this person interested? Lotzur api tzluch means to use it as a bottle stopper, to tie it around his tzluch, as his flask. You might say, I don't know, I'll give you an alternative form of imagery. Does he need it? Does he need this paper in which to wrap fish? Amalei, Rav Yeva says, yeah, that's exactly what this, that's exactly what our question is. Lotzur v'lotzur, yeah, he wants to have it for the use that he's using as a bottle stopper. And hence, he needs some paper to wrap fish, and he took hold of this these documents that had the lien written in them. Can he keep the paper for wrapping his fish, or for using as a bottle stopper? The question itself isn't, you don't see an answer to the question. All what we saw in this Gemara was is Rav Nachman asking, your question is this, is it serious? I mean, someone would have in mind just to hold on to the paper for paper's sake? And Rav Yeva said, yes, people would have that in mind. What the ruling is, that we don't see here. Omar Lei Rabbah. Mashkono Shel Yisrael. Notice we have a Roman numeral number 1. On the side of the Gemara, in our margin, we have Roman numerals 1 and 2 featured. And we've written Shtei Dugmois Shel Mashkon, two examples involving a Mashkon, collateral. Number 1, Mashkon Shehoya Shel Yisrael. A Mashkon, an item that belonged to a Jew, Shelova. The Jew had borrowed money, and he presented to the lender a mashkon. Number 2 involves mashkon shoya shel ger, collateral that was originally owned by a ger, shelova, a ger who had borrowed money. Now we go back to the Gemara. Omar Rabba, mashkon shel Yisrael, biyad ger. A Jew, a regular Jew, borrowed money from a ger, from a convert to Judaism. So the convert is the lender. Umeis hager, and the ger lender died. Ubo Yisrael acher v'hichzik bo, and some other Jew came along and took possession of that mashkon. Motzi eno so miyodo, we take it away from him. I know that we've mentioned this so many times in the past, but we'll say it again. A ger that dies has no heirs. Speaking about, let me be more accurate, a ger that dies leaving no heirs. After his conversion, he didn't have any children. And he had in his house this mashkon because he had lent money to some fellow. Someone else comes along to this, to the house of the ger, which right now would have the status of hefker, of renounced ownership or no ownership. Amongst the items is this mashkon that was given to the ger by some Jew who had borrowed money. Some outsider Jew comes along and takes possession of the mashkon. Rabbah says, we take it away from him. My taima, why? After all, we said that the property of the ger is unowned. Why do we take the mashkon away from this outsider? Kevon demis le ger, since the ger died, poka le shiabude. His shibud, literally his lien upon it, his claim upon the mashkon, becomes void. Poka le, it expires. So the mashkon goes back to its original owner, to the borrower. It's not, as they say, it's not up for grabs. It goes right back to the borrower. Number 2. Let me just go over that last point. Upon the death of the ger, so there's no shiabud, there's no claim, there's no one here to make claim, lay claim on the borrower. So the borrower gets back his mashkon. Number 2, Mashkoinu Shel Ger Biyad Yisrael. A ger had borrowed money, given an item to the Yisrael, the Jew who lent the ger money. Umeis Hager, the ger who borrowed the money died. Ubal Yisrael Acher, v'hichzik bo. Some outsider took hold of the mashkon. The Gemara explains rules. Ze kona keneged moisov. The lender, he has a claim to the mashkon. If we assume for a moment that the mashkon, the collateral, was worth more than the loan that was extended. So if a $100 loan was extended and the lender received a $200 wristwatch, we say that the malva has $100 of value in that wristwatch. The Zeh, the fellow who grabbed the wristwatch, of course, originally was owned by the Ger. The Zeh, Kono es Hashar. The Machzik, he gets the balance, the rest of it. The Gemara asks, Vamai, why should this guy who grabbed the watch get anything? Tikni lei chatsero. The lender should acquire it through the, we'll say, the agency of his chotzer, of his property. This wristwatch was in the chotzer of the malva. It was in the courtyard, in the possession, in the courtyard of this lender. A person's courtyard has the capacity of acquiring items on behalf of the owner. A person's chotzer acquires for him even without his knowledge. So why is the Gemara saying that the outsider who took the Ger's mashkon wristwatch, why does he have any of it? Is it not so that the wristwatch was in the domain of the malva of the lender? And upon the death of the Ger, even though the wristwatch was worth more than the money the lender had laid out as a loan, let the lender get the entire wristwatch through this mechanism called Chatsero Shalom, Koinelo. The Gemara answers. You'll notice we have a long answer marking. Amri, Hocha b'may askinan. Here, what are we dealing with? The lesse. Rashi explains that the lesse means the malve, the lender, is not in town. Kol hecha di isa ledide, di boy makni motzi koni, kanyo le nami chatsero. Any circumstance where the owner is around, if he wanted to, let us say, transact something, he wanted to acquire something, he could acquire. So his chotzer also can acquire. Kol hecha delese l'didei, when the man himself is not around, the boy who lemikni lo motzikoni, that if he wanted to acquire something, he wouldn't be able to acquire. He's not here to acquire. Chatzer unami lo kanya. His chatzer does not acquire for him either. So at this point, we can explain that the malve was not in town, and therefore the chatzer was incapable of acquiring the entire mashkon, the entire wristwatch, on behalf of the lender. Had the lender been there in town, so his chotzer would have been able to acquire the entire wristwatch for him. That wasn't the case, though. He was not in town. Now the Gemara issues a ruling. The Hilchisa, the Gemara rules, that which we said that the Machzik acquires the other part of the Mashko beyond the value of the loan, the Lese Bechatseroi the Lokona. And here we have something very interesting. Before we use the expression the Lese, and I'm following right now Rashi's approach to the Sugya. there is a discussion concerning how to explain this Gemara in the Tosfos that you find on the upper part of the Tosfos column. But in the meantime, we're going to stick with Rashi. And here when the Gemara says Vilchasa Delesse, this word Delesse is explained differently than the word Delesse that we saw just above, four lines above this. Ir Delesse means that the Mashkon, the wristwatch, is not in the chotzer of the malve, of the lender at the time the ger died. That is why the malve doesn't acquire the entire wristwatch. But had the mashkon been in his chotzer, he would have in fact acquired all of it. If we look at the beginning part of Tosfos, he elaborates a bit on the Rashi. We'll look at it together. Rashi, the Tosfos on the, you'll notice the beginning of the narrow lines above. Vilchasa delesse bechotzer, pirusha kuntres, da mashkon koi. The lesse bechotzer, absence from chotzer, is a reference to the collateral, to the wristwatch. De'im ise bechotzer, had the mashkon been in the chotzer, koni, the lender would have acquired it, the entire wristwatch. Afalpi she'ein oimed b'tzad sodehu. And here, this point, you didn't see spelled out in the Rashi, but it's a turnaround from what the Gemara had said before. The chotzer will acquire even if the owner is not standing there. V'tzorech loymar da'ayri b'chotzer ha'mishtamer. We have to say that the chotzer itself that would acquire is one that is guarded. It has a fence around it. The b'chotzer shein mishtameres lo kona elim kein oymed b'tzad sadeh. Had it been an unfenced, unguarded chotzer, then it would not acquire unless the owner is in fact standing right there. Let us now turn to the Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we have a nosei klali, a broad topic, a general topic heading, one word, bor. We mentioned a number of dapin earlier that the perek began with, we'll say, shore-related damages, and here, mem tesel mitbeis, we turn to an entirely new mazik, the bor, the pit, one of the ovos nezikin featured at the beginning of our masechta. So the Mishnah says, "Hachoifer bor b'shus hayochid uposchoi l'rishus harabim." Person dug a pit in a private domain, but he dug it. It seems to me he dug it at some type of angle where the opening to the pit was in a public thoroughfare. Oh, b'rishus harabim. Or he dug under a public thoroughfare. The opening was in a private domain. He started digging the pit in one private domain, and the opening to this was in a different private domain. Chayov. Damage that is caused results in the obligation to compensate. Now, this last point is very unclear if we simply leave it like that. So Rashi points out this chayav is saying ubilvad im hifki rishuso oiso shepi habor lusoicha. The opening to the pit, we said, was in a private domain. The owner of that private domain would have had to renounce his ownership of the surrounding area, renounce his ownership, and thereby the public will find itself there, and then if someone falls into the pit, there will be culpability on the part of the pit owner. I should point out that this consideration of being mafkir reshuso applies equally in the example of a pit that was dug under a public domain whose entrance, the second case here, where the entrance was in a private domain. There too, in order for us to speak about chiyuv, obligation to compensate, the owner of that private domain surrounding the entrance to the pit would have had to renounce his ownership of that private domain. The topic heading that accompanies this section of the Gemara is found on the side, and it reads under the Nosei, Al Eze Boros Chayovim Minatora Mibchinas Mikum. The Torah speaks about the need to compensate for a pit in which damage takes place. The Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Chof Aleph, Psukim Lamed Gimel and Lamed Dalet, deal with the creation of a boar and the need to compensate for damage that is caused therein. What is the location of the boar that we are talking about? The question itself is a bit abstract, because you're probably thinking, well, of course it's a pit that endangers the public. If someone has a pit in the privacy of his backyard, let's say a fenced-in backyard where the public has no access, and you happen to have a pit in your backyard, and some outsider wanders into your property and falls in, you're not going to be bound to compensate. You have a very simple response: what are you doing on my property? Nevertheless, as you will see, as the Gemara continues, you see that there is significance in nevertheless raising this question: what boar, by way of location, from the Torah's perspective, will generate the obligation to compensate? So now we turn to the Gemara, in which we have a machlokes tanoim. Tana rabbanan hachoifer bor b'rishus hayochid upaschoi l'rishus harabim. Person dug a pit in a private domain. The opening to it, though, was l'rishus harabim, in a public domain. Rashi upaschoi l'rishus harabim kevon shatakol b'rishus harabim, since the point of stumbling is in a public domain. Have le kemi shechofroi b'rishus harabim. It's just as if he had dug the entire pit in a public domain. So the source goes on to say that if a person dug a pit in a private domain, but the entrance to it, the opening to it, was in the Rishus HaRabim, Chayov, the owner of the pit, must compensate for any damage that results therein. Vizehu bor ha'omor v'torah divrei b'Shmuel. And that is the pit that the Torah envisioned. Rabbi Akiva Oimer, hifkir rishuso v'lo hifkir boro. Zehu bor ha'omor v'torah. Rabbi Akiva describes something different. He describes a person that dug a pit exclusively in his own domain. Pit and opening to the pit, everything was in his own private domain. However, after doing so, he renounced ownership of the surrounding area. He kept possession of the pit, but the surrounding ground level property, he was mafkir. He renounced ownership of it. By renouncing ownership of it, the public gains access to that area. As we go on in the Gemara, a bow tie shape appears, and under our topic heading, the Mivneh, a bow tie is featured, and it says, Shtei Deos B'malcholku Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva. Two Amoraic opinions, Rabbo, and he's followed by Rav Yosef in the upper part of Nun Amud Aleph. What is the point of disagreement, or concerning what kind of pit would they argue about? In our markings, we're going to highlight the expressions kulei alma and lo nechleku ela with a squiggle underline. Kulei alma indicates that as far as Rabbah is concerned, one situation there will be agreement about, and the other situation that we haven't spelled out yet will be the point of disagreement. So now, the Gemara. Omar Rabbah. Bebor birshus harabim, kulei alma lo pligi demechayev. The case of the pit that is, whose opening is in a public domain, everyone agrees. Rabbi Akiva will admit there that there is chiyuv, my taima. Why is that? Why is it that a pit that's dug in a public domain will generate obligation? Omar Kral, the Pasuk says in Shmos, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Lama Gimel, it says, before we read the Gemara text, because the Gemara text is abbreviated, we look in the on the side of the Gemara where we include the Pasuk Shmos Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Lama Gimel. It says there in the Torah, V'chi Yiftach Ish Bor, O Ki Yichre Ish Bor. If a person opens a pit, or a person digs a pit, v'lo yechasenu, and doesn't cover it, v'nofal shoma shoro chamor, and therein falls an ox or a donkey. Pasuk Lamed Dalet says, Bala bor yishalem kesef yoshiv lebalov, v'ames yelo. Money is paid to the owner, and v'ames yelo, that's subject to greater discussion elsewhere. The Gemara, Rabbah says that a pit that's dug in a public domain, everyone agrees that that generates chiyuv. And why? Omar Kro, we're back in the Gemara, ki yiftach v'chi yichre. Those expressions we saw in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Im al psi, the Pasuk indicated the opening of a pit and the digging of a pit. If for uncovering, opening a pit means uncovering the cover, removing the cover of an existing pit. If for that you would be held responsible for exposing an already dug pit, a pit that someone else dug out, but he covered it, you come along and expose it, and you're held guilty for damage. Al kriyalo kol shekein, for digging a pit at the outset and leaving it exposed all the more so. That would seem to be anticlimactic or redundant. So what is the Torah trying to communicate here by telling us ki yiftach and ki yichre? Ella, rather, what the Torah is saying is shal iske psicha val iske kriya ba'alo. The Torah is holding someone responsible for mere actions. For actions, even though the individual has no holding on it. He has no possession of it. So where does that become prominent? That only actions where you don't have any possession, that is in a public domain. So the Torah is revealing that a bore, a pit that you dig out in a public domain, certain if you uncover a covered pit in a public domain, you're responsible for that, even though you don't have any possession of the pit. You don't own it at all. So as far as Rabbah is concerned, that scenario is unanimous that one is chayav to compensate for. Lo nechluku ela, the disagreement between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel arises only, and we continue at the top of Nun Omen Aleph, Bebor Birshuso. A pit dug in one's private domain, after digging, he then renounces ownership of the surrounding area. Rabbi Kiva Savar, Bor Birshuso, Nami Chayev. That situation also generates obligation to pay. Notice, as far as Rabba is concerned, Rabbi Akiva is always Mechayev. Why is there Chiyuv Dechtiv? Baal Habor. The Pasuk, we read the Pasuk before, Baal Habor Yishalem. The owner of the pit pays. So, you're talking about Bebor Dislay Bailim Komar Rachmona, a pit that has an owner. What kind of pit has an owner? A pit that was dug initially in your private domain, that you dug out in your private domain. True, you were renounced ownership of the surrounding area, but not the pit. You are obligated to compensate for damage that that pit causes. That's Rabbi Akiva, as far as Rabba is concerned. Rabbi Shmuel Sovar, Baal Hatakola. Rabbi Shmuel says that the case just described would not result in penalty, in compensation. So what does Baal Habor mean? That's a reference to someone that leaves an article in a public domain. It's an owned item. It's a takola. Takola means something, a stumbling block, something that you could trip over. So if someone left his suitcase out in the public domain or his backpack or whatever, and someone tripped on it in a public domain, you would be responsible. But not the bore that you dug in the privacy of your own property, even though you may have renounced ownership of the surrounding area. Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rabba, will say you're innocent. You're exempt from compensating. Maybe it's not the nicest thing to do, but you'll be exempt from compensating. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, both situations of bor, one is chayav for, not only the one that you dug in a public domain, but the bor that you dug in your private domain and renounced ownership. Elamai zehu bor omor b'toira dekomer Rabbi Akiva. In the source that we read, which you can see is at the lower part of Mem Tesomet Beis. Well, in that source, Rabbi Akiva used the expression, a limitation expression. And by the way, you can use the arrow that we have to the side of the Gemara text, which enables you to see where this quote comes from. The expression Zehu is a limitation expression, but where is there any limitation according to Rabbi Akiva, as far as Rabba is concerned? The Gemara answers, Zehu bor sheposach bo akosu tchilo litashlumen. The pit that has an owner is the pit concerning which the Torah, when it describes payment, the first time payment is mentioned in the Pasuk. And that, you could see, was in Pasuk Lamed Dalid, the word Yishalem, it said Baal Habor Yishalem. So Baal Habor, according to Rabbi Akiva, was a reference to the pit dug in your private domain with the surrounding area's ownership renounced. So it's a pit, the pit itself is owned, and payment is made. So the idea of compensation is mentioned for the first time in the case of that kind of pit. But as far as a pit, however, a pit that is dug in a public thoroughfare, that certainly generates payment. But the first time payment is made, it's made in the context of the pit that's dug in the private domain, as we explained. Let us take a look at Rashi on the first narrow line. Litashlumen bor deis le bailim, the owned pit nemar etzel tashlumen is the pit that's featured alongside the need to pay. Kidichtiv baal habor yishalem, and the expression baal habor indicated a pit that's owned. Yishalem means payment. Ubor b'shus harabim, the pit in the public thoroughfare nemar etzel hanezikin, that is stated in the context of damage causing. Kinechtiv, kiftach ish v'chiyichre v'nofal shoma v'chulei. Nofal is the falling in, that's the point of damage. And we already explained that the Yiftach and Yichre are words that reflect upon a pit in a public thoroughfare. V'hochi ko'omar Rabbi Akiva. And this is what Rabbi Akiva was trying to say to Rabbi Shmuel. Amai patris bebor birishuso, why do you exempt for the damage caused by a bor in the private domain? V'halo zehu bor amur b'torah eitzel tashlumah. That's the bor that the Torah speaks about when it speaks about the need to pay. Let's turn back to the Gemara. V'Rav Yosef Omar, number two. Rav Yosef, as we show with our bow tie, he's a second approach to explain what is the point of controversy between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. In other words, like we saw by Rabba, they have a point of agreement with Kuli Alma, and we're using the same marking scheme, and then there's Ki Pligi, the point of disagreement. So for Rav Yosef Omar, Bebor Bershus Hayochid Kuli Alma Lo Pligi De Mechayev. Contrary to Rabba, this case, Bor Bershus Hayochid, everyone will agree, generates a chiyuv. According to Rabba, only Rabbi Akiva saw this generating a chiyuv, not Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rav Yosef, though, the bor in the private domain, everyone agrees, generates a chiyuv, the mechayev, the maitaimo. The pasuk says, Baal habor, Omar Rachmona, the bor de islay bailim askinon. The Torah, in obligating you to pay, is talking about a pit that has an owner. That's a pit dug in a private domain with the surrounding area subsequently declared hefker, unowned. Ki pligi bebor b'shus harabim. At what point do Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael disagree? A bor dug in a public domain. Rabbi Yishmael savar bor b'shus harabim nami chayav. Now note that Rabbi Yishmael is the one, according to Rabbi Yosef, that has, we'll say, all the time chiyuv. Not only in private domain, but also in public domain. You're also chayv dechtiv, ki yiftach, v'chi yichra. The same analysis we saw before, the Gemara says here, under Rabbi Shmuel. Imal psicha chayav al kriya lo kol shekein. If for merely opening up, uncovering a bor, you're chayav for digging one initially, all the more so. So what does the Torah mean here? Elo shal iske, psicha val iske, kriya bo lo. That even though, as far as property ownership is concerned, you have no connection to the pit, you nevertheless are chayav, and that is true only in the case of a. That's true in the case of a bor b'shus harabim. So the Torah is saying that kind of bor also generates a chiyuv. For Rabbi Akiva, hano mitzrach tzrichi. Rabbi Akiva, and here Rashi is of critical importance. Rashi, a few lines up from here, Hano mitzvah tzrichi ul'oilom birshus hayochid. We're talking about the pit dug in the private domain. V'hifkir rishuso v'lo boro. And he renounced ownership of the surrounding area, not the pit itself. Da'avele momono shehizik. It becomes your property that causes damage. Chayav mishum dekarina bay balabor. You're chayav because it's an owned pit. Avol perashus harabim delav momono u butter. But a pit dug in a public domain, you would be exempt for damage that happens. It's unowned. There's no one to claim payment from. Well, if that be the case, so why does the Torah speak about psicha and kriya, opening and digging? So Rabbi Akiva says these two terms are necessary. It wouldn't be sufficient to teach just one. De'i kosav rachmona ki yiftach, had the Torah written just that. Hava mina, I would have thought, poiseach hu desagi le bekisui. That one who exposes a pit it's sufficient for him to merely cover the pit in order to be free of damage obligation. Kaira, one who dug a pit from the outset, lo sagi le bekisui aditoim le. I might have thought that the mere covering of the pit is not enough, that in order to free yourself from obligation, you'd have to toim le is to fill it up, to refill it, and seal it shut with filling. Therefore, the Torah mentions in the same context that covering is enough. In other words, it mentions covering together with digging. Had the Torah just written the expression ki yiftach, I would have thought that that one who dug a pit out initially, he has to seal it shut by filling it in. V'ikos avrachmona ki yichret, and had the Torah written just v'chi ki yichret avamina, I would have thought kriya hu deboi kisui mishum dovad maise. The one who dug out the pit, he would have to cover it because he did something of significance. He did a real action, a formal, significant action of digging it out. So in order to exempt yourself from penalty, for needing to compensate for damage, you have to cover it. Avol, poseach de lo oved maisa, ema kisunami lo boy. But one who simply removed the cover, he didn't do anything of significance. Maybe the need to recover it in order to be free from damage obligations, you don't need to do that. Komash Malon, therefore the Torah had to teach that as well, that for merely exposing the pit, if one doesn't recover it, he will have to bear damage responsibility. Well, according to Rabbi Shmuel, as Rabbi Yosef presents things, why in the original, and what is Rabbi Shmuel through the eyes of Rabbi Yosef? He's Mechayev both cases, bore in private domain with surrounding area ownership renounced, plus the bore dug in a public thoroughfare. So we ask why the limitation expression on the part of Rabbi Shmuel in the source that we alluded to before on the bottom of Mem Tes Amid Beis. Velo mai zehu bor omur b'torah dekoma Rabbi Shmuel. Zehu is, as we said, limitation, that this is the bor that the Torah is mechayev for. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Torah is mechayev you for both kinds of pits. Answer, zehu bor sheposach bo hakosuv tchila l'nezikin. It's the pit that is in the public domain that's dug out in the Rishus HaRabim is the pit that the Torah opens up first with regard to causing damage. Let us look at Rashi, a few lines up from here in the Rashi, L'Nezikin. Bor B'Rishus HaRabim Posa Ba'akosu Tchilo Kishadiber B'Nizkoi. When the Torah speaks about bores causing pits causing damage, the first type of pit alluded to was the pit in the public domain. What does it say? V'nofal shama shor chamor. The word v'nofal is the damage. It fell in. Bor b'shus harabim diber boi hakosuv. Ki yiftach, the pasuk says, ki yiftach, etc. V'chi yichre v'nofal. At this point, Rashi raises an interesting issue. V'ikashio masnisin moni, and you'll ask, our Mishnah, that's mechayev both kinds of pits. We saw when we learned our Mishnah, a person who digs a pit in a private domain and renounces ownership of the surrounding area, or a person who digs a pit out in a public domain. In all those cases, the Mishnah said one is chayev. So our question is, our Mishnah is then authored by whom? So Rashi explains, Rabba Muki Lo Rabbi Kiva, the Mechayva Travayu. Rabba will tell you that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Kiva, who says both situations generate chiyuv, pit dug in private domain, pit dug in public domain. Rabbi Yosef Muki Lo Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Yosef will set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Shmuel, who says, according to Rabbi Yosef, both kinds of pit are chayev. As we continue in the Gemara, a new marking appears, a house shape, and on the side in our margin, the house is featured, and we indicate two kushios, two questions, mimakoros from Tanaic sources, al Rav Yosef. We'll be challenging Rav Yosef's approach. By all means, take advantage of our little chart that you find in the upper part of the margin, where you can keep track of Rabba and Rav Yosef and their respective opinions concerning the two kinds of boros. You can see are indicated in the columns across Hachofer Bor B'Rishus HaYochid, V'Hifkir B'Rishuso, and Bor B'Rishus HaRabim. So now a Tanaic source, Meisvei, Hachofer Bor B'Rishus HaRabim, U'Poschoi L'Rishus HaYochid Potter. Person dug a pit under a public domain. The opening of it was in a private domain, and damage results, potter. Now, Rashi adds something of crucial importance here, and the thinking is that the ptur, the exemption, will apply even if you declare unowned, you renounce the surrounding area. The source goes on, V'afal pi she'eno rashoi lasos kein lufi she'eno isin chalal tachas rishus harabim. We say that there is exemption here, even though you did something wrong. What did you do? You tunneled under a public domain. And that is not right. However, the opening was in a private domain. The opening to this pit was in a private domain. There is exemption. Number two, Hachofer Boros Shichnu Moros Rishus HaYochid. A digging took place. Boros Shichnu Moros are different types of pits. They nevertheless represent depth, and they were dug in a private domain, Uposchoi L'Rishus HaRabim. And the opening to it was in a public domain, Chayov. That will create guilt, culpability. Number three, V'Hachofer Boros B'Rishus HaYochid, Hasmucha L'Rishus HaRabim. One who digs a pit in a private domain adjacent to a public thoroughfare, kagon elu hachoyfrim leushin, potter. Like the case of those that dig leushin, foundations for walls that will serve as their house walls. Person is described here as building his house right up alongside a public domain, the outer wall of his house being in a private domain. It's his property. However, he digs out a foundation for the wall, and that foundation is right up alongside the public domain. Rashi says, across from here, you see Rashi Le'ushin, Yisoid is a foundation, L'chaymas Beso, Alpenei Kol Rochav Abayas, Eitzur Shusarabim. A foundation running along the entire wall next to the public domain. The Chavero B'Sefer Ezra, the similar word you find in the Sefer Ezra, in the book of Ezra, in Pasuk Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Beis, it's an Aramaic Pasuk, it says V'ushaya Yachitu. V'ushaya is a reference to the walls. And you find also the Gemara, the Loshen Nofal Ashisa, like the word Le'ushin, a wall fell down. So we're describing the digging of a pit in a private domain, adjacent to a public domain. If damage happens by someone falling into those depressions dug out to serve as the wall foundation, the owner is exempt. Rabbi Yossi Beruda Mechayev Ad Shiase Mechitza Sora. Rabbi Yossi Beruda doesn't tolerate that situation. It's unsafe. And he says you can't do that and expect to be exempt until you set up a wall of 10 tfachim. Or you distance yourself in, you set up your, you start your digging, set into your property, far from where a man or animals walk. How far in? Arba tfachim, four hand breaths in. There's another girsa that is featured on the side, arba amos, four amos in. We don't have to focus right now on the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Yehuda. We're in the middle of raising a long question, and now the Gemara proceeds to show the problem. Taimah de Le'ushin. In this last case, in case three, we said that there's exemption, and that's because your digging was for a house wall foundation. It was a type of digging that's, we'll say, common practice. Ha lav leushin, if it was a digging for some other reason, it wasn't this, we'll say, this common practice. Chayav, one would be guilty if for damage resulting. We take a look at the Rashi, a couple lines down from here. V'tayma delushin, shederech lasos kein, veno posheatz. It's normal practice on the part of people, and it's not considered an act of negligence. Rashi continues, Ha lav lushin chayov. If it was a digging for some other reason in that same fashion, it would create guilt. Almo bor birushuso chayov. So we see here that would be a bor in your property, and it would generate a chiyuv. What did we say in the resha of this source concerning a bor in your property? We said potter. There would be exemption. So we have a resha saying bor birshuso, exempt. And the seifa saying bor, the inference from the seifa saying bor birshuso, chayav. Ha money. This source is in accordance with whom? Who's the author of this? Bishlam ala Rabba, as far as Rabba is concerned, things work out. Resha, the Resha that spoke about exemption concerning Bor Birshuso, Rabbi Ishmael, that's according to Rabba, Rabbi Ishmael exempts Bor Birshuso. If you want, you can keep one finger on the chart that we have, and under Rabba, you saw Rabbi Ishmael Poter in the case of Bor Birshuso. The Seifa is Rabbi Akiva. What does Rabbi Akiva say in case of Bor Birshuso? Bor Birshuso Yochid. What does Rabbi Akiva say? Yechayev. So the Reisha is Rabbi Ishmael, and the Seifa is Rabbi Akiva. Which, by the way, in throughout the Shas, that's an uncomfortable situation. However, we're in a bind right now. You'll see why I say that. As far as Rabba is concerned, you can offer this explanation, even though I would say it's not the ideal Shas explanation, but it's an explanation. Elul Rav Yosef, Bishlamo Seifa, as far as authorship of the Seifa is concerned, that is Mechayev, Divrei HaKol, that's something accepted unanimously. According to Rav Yosef, everyone is Mechayev on a Bor Birshuso. If you look at our chart, you can see that under Rav Yosef, the case of Chorfik Bor Birshus HaYochid, everyone holds as Chayev. Ela Reisha Moni. The Reisha that said Bor Birshuso is Potter. Who authors that? Lo Rabbi Yishmael V'lo Rabbi Kiva. No author for that. That's why you can see that Rabba is in a better position than Rav Yosef. Even though Rabba is saying that you have a Tanaic source that has split authorship, that's better than saying a Tanaic source that we can't account for who would author it. So you have the Reisha that exempts in the case of Bor Birshuso, and exempts, and according to Rav Yosef, everyone Rabbi Kiva Rishmael said, Chayav. Omar Loch Rav Yosef. Now, we have a volcano shape, a trapezoid, and on the side, under our Mivneh heading, Rav Yosef and Rabbah will be featured using this marking. Ha'amodas ha'reshava seifa shelo ketanoi. We're going to be setting up the resha and the seifa in such a way that it's not split authorship. I mentioned before that that's not a good situation to begin with. So we're going to, in our response, we're going to say it's not split authorship. Elul Rav Yosef Kedivrei HaKol. When we learn Rav Yosef in the Gemara, we'll find that he's able to set up the source according to all opinions. And according to Rabbah, according to Rav Ashi's explanation, we'll see that the whole source follows Rabbi Yishmoel. It's Rabbah's version of Rabbi Yishmoel. And now let's see how this is done. The Gemara. Omar Loch Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, who was just attacked, he will answer, Kula. Kula means the Resha and the Seifa that we made allusion to in the source. We had case number one and case number three. The inference from case number three is really Divrei HaKoli. It's accepted unanimously. The Resha that spoke about an exemption, it spoke in the Resha about a boar whose opening was in a private domain. And damage that happened therein does not carry with it any obligation on the part of the owner. You know why? The Resha shelo hifkir lo rishusa velo boro. He did not renounce ownership of the surrounding area. So the surrounding area leading to the opening of that boar was also privately owned. No one had any business walking over there. Damage that results? So the owner is exempt? He has the claim. What were you doing on my property? So as far as the exemption in the Resha, there was simply no reason, no access, no legal permission to be in that area. No legal permission on the part of others to be in that area. So that's why Rav Yosef will say that case is exempt. However, in a situation where one dug a pit in a private domain and did renounce ownership of the surrounding area, everyone would agree, Chayav. Omar Rav Ashi, Hashta de'ukimta l'Rav Yosef l'divrei HaKol. At this point that we've set up Rav Yosef, understanding the source, cases 1 and 3 as being something that's unanimously accepted, it's not a machlokes tanoim, there's nothing that counters his own shita. L'Rabo nami lo tikmo ketanoi. As far as Rabo is concerned, don't set it up like we did before as a machlokes tanoim. Rather, Midoresha Rabbi Shmuel, as far as Rabbah is concerned, there was exemption for the kid, for the pit in the private domain. Rabbah said, in that case, exemption, that characterizes Rabbi Shmuel. So he says, from the fact that the ratio is Rabbi Shmuel, Seifa Nami Rabbi Shmuel, the Seifa that spoke about a Chiyuv is also in accordance with Rabbi Yishmuel. V'taymo de l'ushin, ha lav l'ushin chayav. We inferred from the Seifa that the Seifa made reference to an exemption, that's because you dug for l'ushin. But if you were digging was not for l'ushin, there would be a chiyuv. What's the case? After all, according to Rabbah's version of Yishmael, pits in private domains one is exempt for. So why is there chiyuv kagon? The arvich arvichi li rishus harabim. We take a look at Rashi, and we're going to learn Rashi together with the Bach's edition. The arvich bo arvachi l'rishus harabim, kagoin mekatze mokom mirishuso l'rishus harabim. That's the Bach's edition. This fellow had dug out. We said if he was digging for wall foundation purposes, that's innocent because that's normal behavior. If his digging was for some other purpose, he would be guilty. You know what happened? He dug a pit on his property, but his property originally bordered on the public thoroughfare. He moved inwards and dug the pit. And mekatzemoko, meaning he left the area in front of his house for the benefit of the public thoroughfare. The Havile, he initially moved in, leaving before digging anything. He initially left the area that was originally his property, now given to the public. He didn't dig anything yet. He first gave it over to the public. Don't confuse this with the case of a person who dug a pit initially on in his private domain and only afterwards declared the surrounding area unowned. Here, the order of events would appear to be different. He first declared the area available to the public, and then dug the pit. That is the equivalent of digging a pit in a public domain. Because when you started the digging, the area leading up to it was already part of the public domain. Vilkoch time dilution. Therefore, there would be exemption if he dug for wall foundation purposes. Oh, lav leushal chayav. But if not for that, he would be guilty. But why is there guilt? Because And we're going within Rabbi Yishmael. Why? Because that's digging up. That's the equivalent of digging a bore in the Rishus Rabbim. We turn back to the Gemara with another question. Meisvei. Hachoifer bor b'rishus hayochid. One dug a pit in a private area. Uposchoi l'rishus harabim chayov. He opened it. The opening of the pit was in a public domain. That generates obligation to compensate for damage. B'rishus hayochid. If the opening was in a private domain right next to the public domain, there would be exemption. That the situation is parallel to the case of Hifkir Rishuso. I would like to understand this second case where it was Potter. As Rashi explained, he said, he dug the pit close to a public domain, and then the pit was dug in a Rishus HaYochid, as the source says. They will say the surrounding area of the pit, the rim around this pit, was also part of that private domain, and then he was mafkir, he renounced ownership of the surrounding area. And that's what hasmucha l'rishus harabim implies. He dug the pit very close to the rishus harabim. However, when he dug it, he was digging it in a private area and then renounced ownership of the surrounding area. And it says here, he is exempt. So, bishlamo l'rabo kula Rabbi Yishmael hi. This would work out well for Rabbah. It reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael said that in the case of the pit dug in private domain, subsequent renouncement of ownership surrounding area, exemption. Pit dug in public domain or opened into public domain, guilty. Ela la Rav Yosef, Bishlamo Reisha. As far as Rav Yosef is concerned, the Reisha is fine. The Reisha spoke about pit dug in with opening into public domain as being Chayav Rabbi Yishmael. That works out according to Rabbi Yishmael that there's a Chiv on board, B'Shus HaRabim. Elo Seifa Moni, the Seifa that speaks about exemption for pit dug in private domain and the renouncement of surrounding area, according to Rav Yosef Moni, who is the author, Lo Rabbi Yishma V'lo Rabbi Akiva, according to Rav Yosef, that case, you can always look at your chart, you'll see L'chulei Alma is chayav, everyone holds is guilty. Omar Loch, so Rav Yosef will answer, the exemption in this brief source that we read was B'choifer L'ushin V'divrei Hakol. He was digging for wall foundation purposes, which we said is normal behavior. And he's not poshea, he's not considered reckless. And therefore, everyone will agree that he is exempt for damage that results by someone falling therein. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.